This is the Motley Fool Radio Show, and now it's time to go to the Fool Phones. I welcome back Dayana Yoakum, our personal finance expert here at the Motley Fool. Dayana, welcome.
Thanks, David.
The phone number is 866-NPR-FOOL to Denton, Texas. Hugh, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
What's on your mind?
Basically, I called y'all because I had some concerns. Here in Denton, I feel like the housing market has just gone up tremendously, and I'm worried about a bubble in the housing market up here. Particularly, I just haven't had much luck in the stock market, and I was thinking about either investing in real estate or something like that. And I'm just concerned about maybe it being overpriced.
So it sounds
in
like
the
you,
Texas area.
So Hugh, you have some extra money on the side, or are you a present property owner there?
I'm a present property owner, and I do have some extra money on the side.
And so you're really trying to make an asset allocation decision, trying to figure out where your money is best invested at this point.
That's correct. And right now I do have about a quarter of my long-term savings invested in index mutual funds.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So a quarter is there. What about the other three quarters?
It's in cash in a money market making like less than 1%.
Wow. So, I think that with three quarters of your money just kind of idling, it does make a lot of sense to me to get it invested. And I have two suggestions for you. The first is that you be incremental and don't make an all or nothing decision or feel pressure to do that. Why not take of those 75%, 10% of those 75 and get those invested into an index fund? And 3 months from now, do another 10%, and maybe you're buying three stocks with those. And just build it that way. Don't feel like you have to close your eyes, press a button, and put it all into something. So number one is be incremental. And then number two is just, what should you be invested in? And for us at The Motley Fool, as you probably know, we like index funds a lot for people who are not into this, either because you don't have the time, you're just not that interested in investing or being a student of the game, or you've had bad past experiences, which may be the case for you, Hugh, and so you feel a little bit gun-shy about putting that money on the line in individual stocks. And that's what mutual funds are for.
What do y'all think about real estate investments, though, up here in North Texas or in the Texas area in general?
Whenever we talk about local real estate, I'm the first as a national radio show host to turn it right back to the guy who's on the ground locally, because I don't think I would have nearly the insight about your local market that you would, and I would say that wherever you're calling from. So you've been able to live in Denton, Texas, and observe the growth and see whether you think it's for real or not. I think a big part of real estate pricing is there an influx of people to your area? In the end, real estate, a big part of the supply-demand equation is demand. So if I saw prices rising in my neighborhood, but I didn't really feel like anybody extra was trying to live there, I would probably be bearish on real estate. If, on the other hand, I was in Las Vegas, Nevada, which will grow forever, interminably out into the desert with unlimited space to grow, I would feel good about real estate. And certainly Las Vegas has been the best place to have bought and owned real estate over the last decade. So So what does Denton look like to you these days?
Well, it seems to me that Denton has like that it's very easy to get into a brand new home, and it seems like the homes that have already been built are not selling very well.
Well, I think we've talked about a lot of different options, and the ultimate message here is get that money working for you. I think that's why you were motivated to call, and I think being incremental helps a lot of people.
Thank you very much.
It's not all or nothing. Thank you, sir. The phone number is 866-NPR-FOOL, 866-677-3665. To Norman, Oklahoma, we go next. Brady, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Are you affiliated with the University of Oklahoma, which I know is in Norman?
Yes, I am a sophomore energy management major.
Excellent. Energy management sounds like a highly relevant topic. Buy, sell, or hold solar energy and its future in this country?
Buy. Definitely buy it.
And why is that, Brady? What do you see that people weren't seeing 25 years ago when solar kind of, flared out?
I think it's going to be, in the future, they're going to be able to make it a lot smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not going to be as unsightly, because no one wants 10 by 13 squares in their house.
Yep, so. I understand. There's no question the technology is improving. I don't know if you've ever seen Evergreen Solar. It's a public company on the NASDAQ. But that's an example of an American company, a stock today, that is a play on solar energy. Brady, enough mm-hmm. questions from me. You have one for us.
Yes. I am able to get student loans at a fixed 2.5% rate.
Nice.
And I can take, it's great. And I can take $5,000 extra a year that I don't need for school. And I was wondering if you thought it'd be wise to take that out and increase my debt, but I'd put it in a CD or maybe in the stock market.
Okay, so Brady's real question here is, Should he play lotto with the student loan money?
Well, that's one way of asking it. Although lotto usually takes 50%. That's not a net gain payout. On the other hand, CDs, I mean, that's about a wash. Sounds like at the very least you could do that with CDs. But really the question is, this is an arbitrage opportunity, Dana. The question is there some free money here for a forward-thinking guy like Brady who's willing to take a little extra risk and maybe invest at, it is to be hoped, a higher than 2.5% rate of return.
Right. Well, what scares me about what you said is that you mentioned the stock market as a place to possibly park this cash for a little while.
I'm leaning way towards more a CD because it's just a guaranteed rate of return.
Right.
Because I can't gamble with money I don't have, sort of thing.
Okay, very good. So we're not playing lotto with your student loan money. Why is it that is it that you want to earn a couple extra bucks on this?
Yeah, I was just trying to think of a way I could make some money, just a small amount, and so I could have a little extra to help pay off the loans a little faster.
And it's funny because if we think about CD rates, just sort of a bargain basement rates for money, interest rates today, I mean, 2.5% that you're paying on the loan, that's about what you'd get from a CD. I think there's, not surprising, there's no coincidence that that's the case. It looks like they're offering, for an interest rate that is directly comparable to what many of us would just get with basic savings, the same rate. In other words, there's no specific compelling reason for you to go out and do that, as I can see it, Brady, unless you were shooting for a higher rate of return and taking on more risk very consciously by doing so.
Yeah, I'm a fan of simplicity, especially when you're in school and you could have a rigorous schedule. You probably don't want to spend a lot of time making sure that you're not cashing out a CD early and paying penalty fees or following your money here and there.
I mean,
we're really only talking about, you know, some pocket change.
Sure. I was going to say, Dana and Brady, I mean, what if you could get 3%? Does it make sense to borrow $5,000 extra at 2.5% in order to get a 3% interest payment? Well, if we do the math very quickly, $5,000, 1% of that would be $50. So what we're talking about is you making an extra, well, a half of a percent would be $25 off of $5,000 extra borrowed in order to do this. Free money.
Yeah.
But that's not probably worth the amount of time and trouble that it would take you to achieve that.
Do you know what you should do? Sell your old textbooks on half.com.
Now, that's the way to make more. You tried to buy there? You bought some there?
That's where I buy my stuff.
Where was that, Dana, when you and I were going through college 20 years ago? Where was half.com then, people?
We got pennies on the dollar for our expensive textbooks. But I think our point here is that, you know, just for small gains like that, it probably isn't worth it for just $100 here and there unless you're really hurting for that money.
Yeah.
So go ahead, concentrate on school. You know, sell some stuff in a garage sale or start bartending for tips if you want to make some real cash. And as soon as you're out of school, you can start being a real investor and you can really start beating those 2.5% returns that you're going to get in a CD.
Yeah, I mean, if I knew I could afford to lose the money because I had extra savings or my parents were putting me through college or something like that, I could see doing that. I mean, $5,000, maybe I can make the stock market's historic average of 10% per year. I mean, that's four times what I'm paying in interest. So it starts becoming interesting to me from that standpoint. But it all comes down to whether you can afford to lose because you might have a bad 3 years. That's what it comes down to.
And a very uncomfortable conversation with your mom and dad when you lose your tuition money in the market.
And in fact, Brady, as we close, you are in college, so it makes sense for me to tap your experience and your wisdom in this regard. I hear a lot about college kids these days. My kids are not old enough to be in college yet. How about a word of advice for parents with kids in college or parents with kids who are college bound?
Give your children as much money as they want because they'll pay it back later. I think the main thing to do with school is just don't worry about student loans because it's a good bet, and so
it is a good bet. No question about that.
Yeah.
Have your parents helped you some, or are you putting yourself through college?
They've helped with living expenses, but I've paid for school.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, would you like to formally ask your parents on the show right now, Brady, for more money?
Yes, Mom, Dad, please send some more money.
Okay, and that's from Brady in Norman, Oklahoma, and there's only one of them. Brady, congratulations on some good financial thinking already, some forward thinking on your part, and good luck with school and your finances afterwards.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
The phone number is 866-NPR-FOOL.
Let's go to the fourth largest city in America, if I have my math right, and that's Houston, Texas. Shirley, welcome to the show.
Thank you. My question is, how do you set up a basic budget for when you have inherited a nice sum of money?
An excellent question.
And I need some assistance.
All right.
And we are here to help. Diana?
Well, I'm going to first give you the lazy girl's guide to budgeting, and this is the method that I use, because I'm really not very good at that, you know, line-by-line budget that all of the books recommend that you do.
Okay.
I'm not so sure that if you've never budgeted before that you're going to stick to the real detailed plan. But the best way to budget is to really reflect. Look at your past expenses. So even if you haven't kept track of them yourself, look at your credit card statements, your bank statements. Right there, you've got the cost of what it costs to be you. You've got your housing costs, what you spend at retail establishments, taxes, your insurance. It might take a little while to gather all of that information, but just get a general sense of what you have been spending in the past. Now,
how long a period of time should you look at? Would a year do it?
A year would be great. If you have absolutely no idea what you spend on a monthly basis, I recommend for 1 week, take a little notebook with you and write down everything that you spend, and then just project that over the course of a month and then multiply that by 12, and you've got your yearly expenses.
Okay, what I've been doing is just keeping my receipts in an envelope on a monthly basis for, and I'm going to do a running total on that to see where that puts me and then start checking the rest of my records.
Great. You're way ahead of me.
That's really wonderful, Shirley. Yeah.
That's great.
Just collect the information and keep it all in one place. An envelope sounds good to me.
Are you near retirement? Are you retired?
I'm 70.
You're 70? Okay. Are you?
And I am retired.
Great. Good for you. First thing you want to do when you get a big sum of money is to make sure that you provide for yourself, because even at 70, we're hoping that you live another 25, 30 years. We want that money to last as long as you do and to support you and give you a nice lifestyle. So
okay.
When you have your budget, then and you have a number that is your yearly expenses, the rule of thumb is that a 4% withdrawal rate will sustain you over a 30-year period. Now, if we're talking a substantial sum of money, let's say $1 million inheritance, 4% of that is going to be $40,000 a year. That is what you will be able to take out every year and with the rest of your money still invested and have that last for the next 25 or 30 years.
Not only
years.
That, but that number is time-tested, Shirley. So that looks at all 30-year environments over the last 100 years. And
4%?
That's correct. And in fact, in most cases, you'll have even more than in our hypothetical example, you'll have even more than that million you started with. You'll have even more of that left afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But even in the very worst environment, the worst 30-year period you could imagine in the last 100 years, you would have had that million, and drawing off of it at 4%, you would have been able to use that and over the course of 30 years.
Right.
You would have had nothing at the end, but hey, you know.
So if you say you've inherited more than that, or if you've got other income coming in, go ahead and bump it up to 6%. Right there, actually, you're setting your budget. That's the money you have to live on for a year. Now,
that's
also
helpful, very helpful, because I had saved on my own for the rainy days and retirement living and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is just an addition, but you don't know where you are without some numbers.
Yep, you don't know where you are without knowing where you are is what it comes down to. You have to have a general sense of where your money goes.
And you know, one important note for anyone inheriting a large sum of money, and we do take calls from the Shirleys of the world from time to time on this show, is don't keep that money in a checking account. You can safely earn interest on large sums of money without ever touching the principal. And Shirley, I don't know if you're here right now, but a lot of people will just tend to put it in that most obvious account of all to them, the checking account, and be forgoing pretty healthy interest on a daily, monthly, or annual basis. So,
well, it's going into a skipped generation trust.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And everything I read or heard gave me different numbers.
Okay.
So that's what I was, why I was calling.
Well, we can absolutely, as Diana has done, help you with the withdrawal rate. And a skip generation trust is legal, and it's smart. It's a good way to avoid that money being taxed. And all it really essentially comes down to is making sure that the money that you leave is actually left to your grandchildren, not your children.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good way to reduce the tax burden.
And that's what you also want to think about with an inheritance is your legacy. What kind of legacy you're going to leave your survivors.
Mm-hmm.
So once you've taken care of your own needs, start thinking about that.
Yeah, for example, the Houston Texans football team has not had that great a start to the franchise. You might want to leave a little to the Houston Texans or maybe their grandchildren.
If Shirley is not a football fan.
I am.
I'm glad to hear that. But there are many other.
I need them to be a little bit more consistent.
Well, what we're saying is there are many wonderful causes.
Right. So
make
them prove that they deserve it.
Okay.
So, in closing, a budget creates opportunity so that you make sure you're spending money on the things that bring you joy. So that is one good reason to start looking at your everyday expenses and make sure that your money is going to towards things that you want it to.
Well, it sounds like I'm on the right track then, keeping, doing a flow sheet and doing a monthly and then yearly and then enjoy.
Mm-hmm. You really are, and I'm glad you ended with that word, and that's a good way to end our call, Shirley, because it is, in the end, about your enjoyment. It is not a burden to inherit. Somebody has done something wonderful for you, improved your life potentially dramatically, whoever you are and whatever your context. Congratulations, Shirley.
Okay, thank you.
And that wraps up the Fool Phones for this week. Diana Yoakum is a Motley Fool financial writer, and she's our resident personal finance expert. Thanks, Diana, for joining us once again.
Thanks a lot, David. That was fun.
Our Fool Phone lines are always open at 866-NPR-FOOL.